Thank you for making KHSU your Tuesday destination, and let's take another journey on Art Waves. I'm Wendy Butler. Black Fawn Gallery presents Hollywood to the Redwoods through September 29th. The exhibit features works of pop surrealism by Anthony Ausgang and Jeff Cross. The exhibition also includes a DJ booth of sacred geometry printed on metal, created by Aaron Michael Noble. My guest today is Anthony Ausgang. He lives in Los Angeles, and he joins us by phone. I want to talk with you about some specific paintings that are at the gallery that really captured my attention, and I wanted you to talk with me briefly, if you could, about where the ideas for these particular paintings came from for you. And I'd like to start with, I thought you were driving, because that one is something that looks like a big, and this is just me as a viewer, a big saber-toothed tiger-like creature, a big mouth, and it's about to overcome a tiny creature in a car.
That's right. You pretty much settled that one in.
So what is this about?
Technically and graphically, the painting is made up of images that are from larger separate paintings. I don't think an artist necessarily has to do one kind of work. So I do large color pieces, and then I sort of repurpose the drawings and use them to put together completely different black and white paintings. That particular painting is a sort of construct of two different paintings, one of which was just a big cat mouth in the desert. And the cat, the dude in the hot rod, which is actually a lizard. Yeah, there you go. was from another painting. And I thought, well, you know, I have these drawings. I might as well put them together and see what happens. That's kind of what excites me about these paintings, is that I take these separate elements from other paintings, put them together, and come up with something completely new.
Yeah.
I suppose that particular painting is about danger and how to get away from it.
But I don't know how effectively effective that is, getting away from it. I don't have a lot of hope.
Well, these paintings are kind of open-ended questions that the viewer gets a chance to answer.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody would say that lizard's doomed, and the other person might think he's going to get away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a Rorschach test in a way. What do you see in this painting?
And how does it somehow amplify what's going on in your own mind as a viewer? How do you feel on any particular day? Well, I'm full of hope. Well, I'm hopeless. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have to ask how your day's going. I just ask, what do you think of this painting?
Exactly. So, and then we've got three characters in search of a punchline. Is that also creatures, you know, characters from different paintings, or did you just group these three guys together? They look like, a rooster, a cat. There's that cat again. There's a rooster, a cat, and some kind of ghost. I don't
know.
An
alien.
Casper the ghost, an alien. I don't know.
But, yeah, it's definitely an alien.
Okay. I mean, did you put them together in this one painting, or are they from different stories that you've combined for this new painting?
I did a very large color painting with these three. They've always been a trio. In other words, those three characters have always been sort of
together.
And these small black and white paintings tend to be a bit more simple than my larger works. So the larger one was really psychedelic and really acid-colored and crazy. And I thought it'd be really interesting to just sort of isolate the trio of characters. Now, the reason it's called that is because it's kind of a setup for a punchline, which is, you know, a chicken, a cat, and alien meat, and
Yeah, go into a bar and.
Right, exactly. And so once again, it's kind of a, it's an opportunity to, for me to find out what people think about the painting. You know, like what exactly are these three people, three characters doing together? I call them people because in a way they're stand-ins for people.
And that leads me to my next question, because without talking, you know, too much about a mouse on a stick or the last piece, both of those star cats again. We've got cats. And and so as stand-ins, I guess, or, you know, for people, I'm not, I don't know, I want you to speak about this, because is this, you prefer to use animal characters, or, I mean, why, and it's particularly cats, okay, I love cats, but I'm just wondering, why?
The reason I use these cartoon characters instead of people is that ever since the cave paintings, the human figure has been the center of art. And when I was in art school, I was constantly being bombarded with the concept of the avant-garde. And I thought to myself, well, if you really want to be avant-garde, get, scotch the human figure and see what happens. So I decided at that point to start using animal characters instead of people. Now, why it was cats, you know, I'm always asked that question. I haven't really come up with a suitable answer for that other than it just works.
I love that. Well, do you own cats?
Yes, my wife's a veterinarian. We have five cats.
Nice. Nice. Well, I'm sure that has something to do with it. I mean, they're part of your everyday life. You're able to study them.
Yeah, and cats have also been hanging out with people for a long time. I mean, you know, I think the first example is probably ancient Egypt. So in a way, the cats are pretty good followers of human history. So I think that I can get a lot of stuff across about people with them, because they're sort of our, you know, non-human companions in all of this mess.
Yes, yes, mess. You've got it right. There's lots of mess to go around. And so, and also, when I was looking at your paintings, lots of seeming angry emotions, or I might be wrong, you know, trying to pinpoint some kind of emotion, power, anger, power, because some of the paintings, one, you know, they're flipping the bird, you know, some of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't mean like an actual bird. I mean like the middle finger thing.
Right.
And then,
right.
And so, it, you know, would you say that these characters were asserting power? Were they asserting? Is there some anger happening? And if there is, you know, why is that?
You know, it's interesting when I read your questionnaire about that, because.
Yeah.
I try to actually to emphasize humor in my paintings.
Oh, okay.
I feel that humor is a great antidote to our crazy world. And so I sort of decided that I could get my ideas across in a humorous fashion. Now, I'm not really sure that anger is the main emotion going on here.
Okay.
I'm basically a reporter. I think all artists are a reporter about current times. And I feel like, you know, getting the finger, particularly in New York, is kind of meaningless. You know, it's almost like saying hello in some places. So I tend to sort of put the graphic image ahead of meaning. So if I feel like, oh, this situation kind of, to get spiced up by a middle finger,
mm-hmm.
I don't really think about what it means so much. I'm more interested in solving the graphic equations in a painting.
Hmm. Now, these paintings that are at Black Fawn Gallery are, and in a way, you've started to answer this question, but I'm not sure. Are they part of any longer story that you've been telling, like a longer story or series?
There's only one element that I feel is really consistent in all of these, and that is that all of these events in these separate paintings are taking place in a cartoon-based parallel reality,
mm-hmm.
or cartoon-based, you know, parallel universe. So the characters in painting one are sort of in the same they're in the same universe as the characters in number 20. But that's about as far as it goes. I'm not trying to have a sequential story going like in a comic book or a comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people imagine that's going on because they're sort of conditioned to see, you know, black and white line drawings as being comics, and so therefore, you know, the paintings should somehow all relate to each other, but they all stand alone.
You talked a little bit a couple minutes ago about your thoughts. Do you have some things, some specific themes that you're exploring through your paintings?
Yeah, absolutely. I basically, my manifesto is that I try and solve the riddle of I try and solve the human mystery in cartoon character terms.
Hmm. And so, the solve the human mystery—the mystery about what?
What it is to be human. What, you know? What is love? What is tragedy? What are all these things really? When you think about mortality.
Hmm. Would you find in creating these that it is bringing you any sort of resolution to your own question?
Artist therapy. yeah, there's certain times that I felt driven to do a painting because of something that I've seen or experienced, but I don't really feel that doing a painting is going to solve it.
You know, I've talked to so many artists in the past about trying to affect social change through art. But do you feel, I mean, do you as an artist feel that you can make, I know this is cliche, sorry, do you feel you can make some sort of a difference through your art?
Yeah, sure. But I think that when one crosses over the border to trying to make a big difference, then one's venturing into propaganda. Mm. And propaganda isn't always the other side. Propaganda can also be applied to our side.
Anthony Ausgang, one of the artists in Black Fawn Gallery's Hollywood to the Redwoods exhibit, on display through September 29th. You found Art Waves on KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler.
I try and exist in a kind of neutral netherland of art that, well, you know, if people want to look in at and see the solution to some social injustice, that's great, but I'm not out there trying to force that on anyone.
I have a copy of, and I just got this yesterday, Vacation from Reality.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Your art. Now, and again, this is reinforcing the question I have for you. Have you always done, I guess, cartoon-type characters as your method of expressing your art?
Always.
Yeah, okay. And how far back does it go? Before, does it go back to childhood? I don't know.
Well, yeah, you know, I like to try to drop a nugget, and I'd like to say that basically it all comes down, it's not even theory. Uh-huh. Basically, I was a terrible draftsman in life drawing class. I could not draw the human figure worth a dime. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, if I can't draw the human figure, I mean, I can learn sense of proportion and how the body exists in three-dimensional space, but since I can't draw people worth a dang, I'm going to use cartoon characters. It seemed natural to me at the time, but I didn't realize how far out in left field that was in the late 70s.
Hmm.
No, there are very few people presenting cartoon imagery as fine art at the time. I mean, now it's completely accepted.
Mm-hmm. Did you study art formally, and if so, where did you study?
I went initially to the University of Texas, and I took two semesters of art classes there. And then I found out that in order to get a degree, I'd have to take four semesters of Texas history, which seemed pretty horrible. So I found out this amazing thing that I'd never heard of, which was art school. So I drove to Los Angeles and went to the Otis Art Institute here for a couple of semesters. At that point, I got really antsy about showing in the galleries. I didn't see any reason for me to be a student. I wanted to get out there and be a professional artist as soon as possible. So I quit school. I got a job as a production painter, and the rest is history.
A production painter. Can you explain more what that means?
Yeah, I worked for a fabric painting company. Hand-painted fabric was really big in the 80s, at least with this particular company. And so I would have the job of painting like 100 yards of a particular pattern. And I learned a lot of really cool techniques. And I applied those techniques to my own paintings and, just explored and found out what worked for me outside of my job. And I learned a lot of technique and practical things that and got paid for it at the same time, as opposed to, paying somebody to teach me that stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, you learn by doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I learned with somebody else's supplies.
Uh-huh.
That was
nice.
The best part. Oh, look at all this expensive paint. Well, let's see what happens if I mix these two together. $10 down the drain, literally.
And so I'm wondering, who inspires you personally, artist or no? Just what,
Well, I was always into the commercial illustrators of the 40s and 50s. A guy by the name of Boris Artsibashev was a big influence. He sort of did anthropomorphic. He did a really cool series of anthropomorphic drawings of a foundry, where like the different machines in this place were used in the foundry were sort of depicted as, having personality and being alive. It was really cool. But I didn't really, one of the reasons I left Texas is I just felt I wasn't being appreciated, and there was nobody there that I admired enough that I wanted to study up. So that's why I left and came to California. I was very fortunate that pretty early in my tenure here, I met an artist by the name of Robert Williams, who drew for Zap Comics and worked for Ed Ross Studios and was a real sicko counterculture artist type in the 60s. And when I discovered that guy was living in L.A. and I had a chance to meet him and hang out, that really, put some wind in my sails, recognizing that I wasn't the only person doing this kind of art. And of course, my parents took me to the finest museums in Europe. I got to see, incredible paintings at the, Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. I got to see amazing stuff at the, different museums throughout Europe. And so I knew what fine art was, but I wanted to sort of mix it up. Because, I felt like it was okay to admire a painting, but that didn't mean I have to paint like that or think like that. If I'm going to look at a Bruegel painting, I can admire it and love it, but that doesn't mean I have to emulate it.
Now, I got my hands on one of your books that you brought here.
Oh, the novels?
Wait a minute, I'm going to grab it. Now, I haven't had time to read this.
Which one is it?
Okay, what I'm looking at, and I don't know, maybe some of the, we have to be, this is the Pawnee Republican.
Okay, cool, right.
And again, I'm just leafing through it, and the language is interesting, but I cannot ask you definitive questions because I haven't read it, but do you do a number of books like this? Is this something new for you? Is writing books? And if so, are you writing these books? What kind of books are these? Nonfiction, commentary, fiction, science fiction? Like, what is this?
Well, the root of my journalistic tendencies began in high school. I got, A's basically in English, and when I graduated from high school, I sat down with my parents and I said, I'm going to be a journalist. Mm. And they said, forget about it. you cannot, under any circumstances, be a journalist. So I was like, okay, well, I'll be an artist. And they were pretty much shocked into silence, which to me meant yes, go ahead. So I always had this urge to write. Mm. That was one of my, like I said earlier, I think artists are allowed and should be encouraged to express themselves in as many shapes, forms, and fashions as possible. And I just found that I could express some serious ideas through writing that would be extremely difficult to get across in a painting. Because that's the reason we have paintings, we have music, and we have literature, is that the ideas can't be expressed in every one of those. Frequently a heavy idea can only be expressed in one way, whether it's music, literature, or visual art. So back in the 90s, when I first got a computer, 95, I think that's a golden year that people began getting emails and started having their own computers. Mm-hmm. And that's when I heard about this, when I found out about something called spam, which was unwanted emails coming through hawking all kinds of weird stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
And in order to thwart the spam filters, a lot of these emails I would get would have simply blocks of text attached to it. There'd be a link to Viagra or whatever the hell it is. And then to thwart the spam filter, they'd just choose some random text. It could be Shakespeare. It could have been a Maytag washing machine manual. And I found those things really interesting. So I saved as many of my emails as I could. And I thought, just for grins, I'm going to put all these random blocks of text together and see what happens. And I realized that if I shifted a few pronouns around, I could have a sort of psychedelic abstract novel going. My first book is pretty much unreadable because of that. But then I sort of polished that off in The Pawnee Republican. And I think my third novel, which is The Browser, is actually the best example of that. So a lot of my novels... My three novels are basically put together from spam emails, and I would come up with a plot, vague as it might be, to have all these things going on.
And so in doing this, I mean, is this relatively, you said 1995, but that isn't when, like, for instance, the one I'm looking at, this is like 2013, so this is relatively recent.
Yeah, no, it took a long time. I mean, you know, my career and all my bread comes from making and selling paintings.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have an opportunity to indulge myself in that way until recently.
And so this is very different from painting. So is this like completing something for you artistically that the painting does not? Is this especially your interest in journalism?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think that one can get in really much further in depth on an issue with writing than painting. I mean, it would be really difficult to write to make a painting about spam emails. I don't even know how you'd do that. because those things arrive in a literate form.
Yeah.
So to transfer them into a visual form would be like insane. So I just thought, well, I've got ideas that I want to express, and the only way to do it is with literary means.
And so at this point, are you working on, what are you working on? Are you working on some new books, some new paintings?
Yeah, I'm working on a screenplay about the art scene in L.A. in the 80s.
Nice.
And I'm culling all my recent spam emails to possibly get another sort of psychedelic abstract novella going. But yeah, right now I'm working on, in terms of literature, I'm working on a screenplay, and I'm always working on paintings for one show or another. As I get older and become sort of a senior artist in all of this, I feel part of my responsibility is to give advice and motivation to younger artists, which was actually one of the finest moment, I think, at the Black Fawn Gallery was that I was approached by a fan who was probably not even 25, and I get this all the time. You're like, what's the secret?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make it? So that was great, because I was able to tell this guy, look, you know, in my opinion, don't worry about technique. Worry about your style. Worry about your content, and your technique will take care of itself. And I think just one comment like that can really help, because I got helped by older artists when I was younger.
Anthony Ausgang, whose paintings are on display as part of the Hollywood to the Redwoods exhibit at Black Fawn Gallery through September 29th. He joined us by phone from Los Angeles. Black Fawn Gallery is located at 212 G Street in Eureka. Gallery hours are Thursdays through Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. For more information, you can visit blackfawnart.com. And that's all the time we have today. Art Waves is broadcast each Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. It's available anytime at khsu.org. And podcasts of this program are available for download from iTunes. Until next time, I'm Wendy Butler. Thank you for listening.